This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. One of the longest combat missions in American history ended this week. Operation Iraqi Freedom is over. But for many of the men and women coming back from their deployments, it's just the beginning. The beginning of discovering and then coming to grips with the mental anguish that sometimes afflicts those who've seen war. In a moment, we'll hear about how the military is dealing with it, but first to the story of one combat soldier who still struggles to leave Iraq behind.
My name is Specialist Coley Bazell. I was an infantryman in the United States Army, Striker Brigade, and was in Iraq late 2003 to 2004.
About a year after 9/11, Coley Bazell had been bouncing around odd jobs in San Francisco, but he didn't feel like his life was going anywhere, so he walked into a recruiting office and signed up.
I didn't know what I wanted to do or be, and our country was at war. You know, this was my chance to be a part of history.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Huge amount of fire getting much, much closer.
I remember being at the Chow Hall at Fort Lewis and paying attention to the news and seeing it. All they were showing was the invasion of the room. And I remember thinking, man, we need to hurry up and deploy over there, because if we don't do that soon, I'm going to miss out on the whole experience.
Coley got to Iraq in the fall of 2003. That was about 5 months after President Bush announced the end of the fight.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended.
Coley was 26 years old.
I remember just having this adrenaline in me. Like, I remember in the tent in Kuwait, talking to my friend Specialist Horrocks, telling him how excited I was and couldn't wait to cross the border into Iraq. You know, Horrocks has been in for a while. And, I'll never forget, I remember he told me, he was like, be careful what you wish for, you just might get it.
Coley was sent to a base in Mosul. He saw plenty of combat, but also extended periods of boredom.
Up and down the same streets over and over and over again. Counter-mortar missions, patrols, ambushes, raids. You go up on a hill, you dismount, you sit there, you wait. Think of all the things you're going to do once you go back home.
And he did go back home. His tour wrapped up in 2004, and at first he was glad to be back, excited to return to civilian life, and counting down the days till his commitment to the Army would end.
But after a while, you're like, hey, wait a minute, you know, you realize you're viewing everything entirely different. You'll be at a bar at a restaurant, and out of nowhere, you'll just be like, well, you know, this war over there doesn't affect anything that goes on here. You know, the war just seems invisible.
He got his discharge and started to get back into civilian life. That is, until early 2008, when a letter arrived in the mail.
Came in a manila envelope, opened it up, and it was my orders telling me to report back to Fort Benning 3 weeks from when it was sent. And it gave the purpose right there on the form. It said purpose, Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Back in 2004, when he returned from his first deployment, Coley started drinking heavily, and he started getting nightmares. And when he got that letter, he was sure he couldn't face going back. And so he went to a VA hospital to get evaluated by a psychiatrist. Coley suspected he was suffering from PTSD. The next day, the doctor handed him a letter to take to Fort Benning.
Mr. Bazell came into the evaluation visibly distressed, uncomfortable, presenting with flattening. When asked about his experience in Iraq, he became more agitated. That one of the main incidents involved a firefight that lasted all day that took place. During the course of talking about this incident, Mr. Bazell's speech became increasingly
he reported that
softer,
he drinks heavily every day as a way to avoid these traumatic memories, usually to the point of blacking out so you can eventually fall asleep.
He is severely isolated, spending most of his days in his room and sometimes going for several days to weeks without speaking to anyone.
Severe intrusive thoughts.
Upon returning from Iraq, Mr. Bazell and his wife divorced.
Irritability.
Hypervigilance.
Difficulty sleeping.
Feelings of depression and avoidance of people, places, and things that trigger him or remind him of his service in Iraq.
The Army determined Coley wasn't deployable. He never went back to Iraq, and 3 months ago, he quit drinking. He's still dealing with symptoms of PTSD, but he's trying to work through them by focusing on something else.
Now it's school. You know, instead of tuning out and numbing myself to the point of blacking out every night, absorbing myself in the books. You know?
Have you gotten to the point now where you don't think about Iraq every day?
Well, I could sit here and say I try to, but that's impossible. Maybe not certain incidences, but just sort of this feeling that, yeah, I'm a veteran. I was over there. You know, it's just with me every day.
That's Colby Bazell. He spoke to us from KQED in San Francisco. He's written a book adapted from a blog he wrote during his tour. It's called My War, Killing Time in Iraq. Now, thousands of soldiers like Colby are diagnosed with PTSD, but there's also another disorder, traumatic brain injury, with similar symptoms. But TBI isn't a psychological condition, it's a physical one.
Fundamentally, PTSD is a disorder where you remember too much, whereas TBI is a disorder where you don't remember enough.
That's Dr. Gregory Oshanek. He's the National Medical Director for the Brain Injury Association of America. And he says many soldiers who actually suffer from TBI are diagnosed instead with PTSD.
Well, the main differences are that individuals with traumatic brain injuries also will have neurologic symptoms such as headache, light sensitivity, dizziness, and will have difficulty many times with balance. Whereas individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder will have more of the re-experiencing the symptoms, feeling ashamed, feeling guilty, avoidance types of behaviors, things of that nature.
I'm wondering, I mean, TBI presumably has been around since the invention of explosives. I mean, it's been a byproduct of war, but it's really something that we've only started to hear about with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why is that?
Well, number one, you're correct. TBI has been around ever since individuals have learned how to hit their heads on things. But currently, the reason is that we are becoming more able to keep people alive that previously would have died from severe injuries.
What kinds of trends are you seeing among troops returning from Iraq and Afghanistan who are experiencing symptoms of PTSD or TBI?
One of the disturbing trends is still the sense of underdiagnosis, of looking at the PTSD as being the only disorder that exists. I'll give you a good example. With mild traumatic brain injury, one of the primary areas that's injured is with our frontal lobes. Our frontal lobes is what guides our behavior, what provides structure to our day. So when I get up in the morning, I've got to figure out what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to put on. I've got to figure out the route that I'm going to go to work. All of that is governed by frontal lobes. When you're in the military, these kinds of things are already determined for you. So you may have damage to your frontal lobes that are not manifest while you're in service, and then you go home to your community where you're asked and expected to be able to initiate these things yourself, and you have difficulty. So you end up having problems initiating. You look lazy. You may be seen as being anxious and depressed. You may start drinking because your relationships aren't going well. So many of these subtle kinds of changes really do represent damage to the starter part of our brain.
That's Dr. Gregory Oshanek. He's the National Medical Director for the Brain Injury Association of America. He joined us from the studios of member station WCVE in Richmond. Dr. Oshanek, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much.
NPR's Daniel Zwerdling and T. Christian Miller of ProPublica have been investigating how the military treats soldiers with TBI. Danny's in the studio with me. And Danny, why do so many of these men and women go undiagnosed?
A number of reasons. One reason is that many commanders in the military still don't believe that traumatic brain injury is really
real.
Much of an injury. That's right. Another reason is that a lot of the doctors were never trained to diagnose traumatic brain injury. You know, and you know this guy from having reported on the military, a lot of the doctors who went to the war were pediatricians, or they were foot doctors, or they were family practitioners. You know, they saw the occasional concussion, but they didn't have any training in blast injuries.
Now, Danny, I know you've spent a lot of time with troops on bases. What kind of care do they receive when they get it?
I can't speak about all the bases, but we focused on one big base. It's the third biggest Army base in America, Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas. We found soldier after soldier after soldier after soldier who had come back with terrible cognitive problems, not getting good care. In fact, often getting blown off for months or years, even though they were complaining about their symptoms.
It sounds so sobering, but I'm wondering if in any way, I mean, the military presumably was saying, look, you know, these are isolated cases. We are really on this. We understand it. We're getting this.
We have talked a few times with the vice chief of staff of the U.S. Army, Peter Corelli, And he has acknowledged that a lot of commanders still don't get it. I asked him recently, all right, if 10 is where you think the military needs to be in terms of understanding and treating traumatic brain injury, where do you think the Army is now? He said, I think we're at a 6, but we came from a 2.
Yeah.
Or a 3, and I think we're edging towards 7, but still a long way to go.
Danny, something you've been working on with ProPublica, which will air next week on NPR, is whether soldiers who are suffering from TBI should get the Purple Heart.
Here's the most symbolic gesture that the military can do to say, you have been wounded in action,
yeah.
Give you the Purple Heart. And we found that soldiers across the country who we talked to, who've been diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, treated for TBI, are not getting their Purple Heart.
Are they eligible for it?
But
I mean, you don't have to draw blood to get the Purple Heart.
No, that's right. Oh, that's right. There's been a big debate in recent years over whether people with post-traumatic stress disorder should get their Purple
yeah.
Heart. Many people think they should. But the regulations have always excluded them. The regulations have always said, if you get diagnosed with a concussion, mild traumatic brain injury, then you do get the Purple Heart. But we're finding that's often not the case.
That's NPR's Daniel Zwirling. You can hear NPR and ProPublica's reporting on the Purple Heart and TBI controversy next week. Danny, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Guy.